Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Welcome back, sports fans. Today's Wednesday, October 30th. This is show number two, episode 136. I'm Gino here with Kevin and Darren. Catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram. We're all over the place now. Give us a look, join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to send us some comments, questions. We're going to start it up. We've been talking about the Yankees in the World Series. We're going to move it over to football now. Week 8 is in the books. We're going to start with the Jets. New England winds up getting the win 25-22 against the Jets. Both teams now 2-6. Jets suffered a disappointing loss. Despite Aaron Rodgers throwing for 233 and two touchdowns, Pats got a last-second touchdown from Stevenson to overcome an early injury to quarterback Drake May. Jacoby Brissett stepped in, leading two crucial fourth-quarter scoring drives, snaps a six-game losing streak for the Pats, while extending the Jets' losing streak to five games. That's the basic information. Kev, let's start it off with the New York Jets.
This franchise, and those of us watching on YouTube, this background I have, that is our damn highlight. That is the only damn highlight we have for this franchise. And it is a franchise known for terrible losses. This ranks way up there. You're playing a one-win Patriot team coming back from London. Their coach called them soft after the game. That's how bad New England is. First quarter, first half, Drake May on these scrambles are killing the Jets. We got lucky that he got hit and concussed and got knocked out of the game so we can bring in Jacoby Brissett. But this wonderful team keeps the Patriots in the game and lets Jacoby Brissett drive them 12 plays, 70 yards, and 235 to score a touchdown with 23 seconds left. What the hell is this defense? This was atrocious. This was awful. Yes, I know. Yo, Greg Zuerlein missed another point after. And another field goal. Yes, I know Greg Zuerlein may have cost us three games this year. But there's no way this game should have even been in that position. You destroy the Patriots. And they go out there and let the Patriots hang around and win the game. And now they're 2-6. And the season is likely over. Because now they're 2-4 in the conference. They've lost to the Bills. They've lost to Pittsburgh. There's a tiebreak. They've lost to Denver. There's a tiebreak. Now they lose to the Patriots. And what really pisses me off is that as a Jets fan, there are very few seasons that we go into the season with high hopes. Last 25 years, and Darren, correct me if I'm wrong, 99 we had high hopes coming off the 98 AFC Championship.
We did.
With Bill Parcells,
got hurt in the first half of the first game.
Bill Parcells is head coach, and Vinny, first half, Achilles, done for the season. They won our season. Through the 2000s, we had some good teams in there. Nobody that prognosticators were thinking were Super Bowl teams. And we had to deal with Tom Brady in the 2000s. We got some good years with Rex Ryan these first 2 years with Mark Sanchez. But then after the second year, he fell off a cliff. And we've been struggling for the last 13 years. And finally, last year, we had a chance. We bring in Aaron Rodgers. 1 year removed from back-to-back National Football League MVP seasons. And he goes out. Four plays last year, our season lasted. All right. He comes back healthy this year. They make improvements on the offensive line. And I'm still thinking to myself, this is a good team. Improved offensive line. They have Hall. They have Wilson. You have Gardner. Run defense may be a little shaky, but this is still a top five defensive unit. And for the last 3 weeks after they fired Saleh, and Ulbricht was trying to be the head coach and the defensive coordinator, this defense has fallen apart. This team has fallen apart. And this franchise makes it so damn difficult to be a Jet fan. I wear myself proudly. I don't know why. Because this franchise just disappoints time after time after time. And at this point, unless they show me something the rest of the year, I don't think I need to be talked about the more than 30 seconds on this damn podcast. Darren, there's my rant.
Well, I'm going to say that, I mean, listen, they're a Greg Zuerlein away from being 5-3. To be perfectly honest with you, as much as it sounds ridiculous, this guy's been awful. This guy has just been disgusting as a kicker. He's fallen off the face of the earth. Now he's on the IR, and then we're going to blame it on an injury. The fact that he couldn't kick the first six, seven, 8 weeks of the season, it's a joke. But even with that, it turns away the way that you coach. You can't even play for a long field goal right now because you have no confidence. You didn't even think he was going to hit the 44-yarder that he missed. You knew he was going to miss it. The extra point's a joke. All this stuff is happening. Everybody else playing against Pittsburgh, I don't see everybody getting the extra points block like this. It's been horrible. A lot of things that stand out. The 62-yard punt return, what are you doing? How do you let that happen? We're supposed to have Irvin Charles as a star. But you know what? He's not a star because he let that happen. Michael Clemens, another roughing the passer. Never gets to the quarterback, only gets to him late because he's a freaking idiot. Cut him. Cut him now. Cut him in front of everybody. Enough of Michael Clemens. Delay a game on a two-point conversion. You know what? Everybody's making fun of Rodgers all over the place, and I got to be honest. He hasn't been awful. He hasn't been great, but the one thing he's really sucked at is knowing what the play clock is. It's goddamn embarrassing. You've been in the league. Yeah, they call three first half timeouts because you couldn't do anything with it because you can't figure out that the clock is winding down. I mean, come on. It's like Dan Marino in the commercial where he said, let's go back and play. He's putting the glasses on, and he can't read the freaking thing. That's what it looks like because he still puts the ball for the most part. Listen, huge interception against Pittsburgh. I'm not trying to say he's been great. But for the most part, he's been relatively accurate. He still throws a pretty good ball. Not that mobile, but the O-line's been a little bit better the last couple of weeks. At the same point in time, you know, not doing enough. But, you know, you put up – here's the thing. If Zuerlein kicks his field goal and his extra point, the Jets are up 10 late, and that comeback has no chance of happening. And if they won the game by 10, you wouldn't sit there and say, well, it's a 10-point road win. It wasn't great, but it was okay. But instead, they give up the late touchdown because this defense has been overrated for years now. We've been overrating them ourselves. Every single player on this team it doesn't show up in big spots, all of them. And, you know, Quinnen Williams you don't see in big spots. They refuse to get an anchor that plays defensive tackle that can stop the run. Why do that? Let's just have speedy guys get run over as teams run it down our throat. I don't know, man. I just don't get it. But they allowed a 3rd-and-9 scramble by Brissett on that last drive. How do you let that happen? You know he's only a running quarterback. You know we can't throw. You're going to let him get outside the pocket all of a sudden because these guys don't know how to hold it up? Well, listen, will Reddick, as he plays more, improve the defense? Of course he will. Why? Because that means I have to see Clemens less. That's what that means. And that's a win right there because Clemens, who showed signs as a rookie, has been horrible ever since. And they let Franklin Myers go because they had Clemens. And, you know, it's like, you know, at least Franklin Myers was steady against the run. Got a little bit of a pass rush. You could live with it. But right now, it's just disgusting to watch this team. I'm not as down on the quarterback as a lot of people are. I know he hasn't been great, but I don't think he's been awful. You see signs with Wilson in games. You see that Breece Hall can play, but I don't know how he gets 16 carries to Braylon Allen's 12. He was the hot hand. Give him 20 carries. Keep Braylon at 8. Let's go with the hot hand. I don't know what's going on. And Ulbrich is certainly not the answer of coach. Rex Ryan is begging for this job. In midseason, you never see this. With a whole new coaching staff and the whole thing, you never see something like this. And this is where we are. This is what this team is. It's freaking, 2-6. The season is basically over. I mean, not to say basically, it's over. I mean, listen, they have to run the table to get into the playoffs. Or as Gino would say, go 8-1. You know what? They have a better chance of going 1-8 than 8-1. Would you be surprised they finish with 4 wins now, Kev? Because I wouldn't.
What they're going to do is suffer through another few bad games and then win 2 games in December to make sure we pick like 8th instead of 3rd.
So we can't get the quarterback of the future.
Exactly. Because that's what the Jets do.
It's, you know what? Just an embarrassing team loss. That's all I have to say. G?
He's not a head coach.
No, he's not even close.
Really? Really?
Listen,
I'm just Salah all of a sudden.
I'm one of the ones who called for Salah's head.
Ulbrich wasn't the answer.
This is looking like a horrible decision right now to make Ulbrich the head coach right now. I mean, I feel like there's no leadership. Like, there's nothing going on with him as a head coach right now. It's really bad. Listen, you guys said enough. I won't get into it. They're 2-6 right now. Their playoff chances are slim to none at this point. Even if they get up there, they're going ahead of – they need to climb so many teams. They're going to lose like every tiebreaker known to man with some of these teams. It's a long shot. Kev?
And somehow, some way, and I know Houston with Nico Collins out and with Diggs out now, how the hell are the Jets favored against Houston on Thursday night?
They just want to give the bettors a chance to get their money back off last week, because there's no way the Jets are winning this game by a point and a half or any point. You know, it's a joke. They overbet the Jets every week. They were 7-point favorite in New England. They're not a 7-point better team than anybody.
Last week, even in our picks, I said I'm almost tempted to take the Patriots. I just can't pick against my Jets.
Yep.
Well, guess what? The rest of the year, I will be glad to pick the Jets if I feel like I need to.
All right. We will move to the other New York team. That was the Monday night game. Pittsburgh beats the Giants 26-18. Pittsburgh goes to 6-2. Giants also 2-6. Steelers powered by Calvin Austin III's explosive punt return touchdown and a 29-yard scoring catch got the win, scoring their third win, taking a one-game lead in the AFC North. For the Giants, Tyrone Tracy ran the ball 20 times for 145 yards and a touchdown, but Daniel Jones was inconsistent, throwing 24 completions in 38 attempts. He did throw for 264 yards. The Giants' frequent penalties, they were 11 for 65, and late turnovers ultimately led to the loss. Giants 2-6. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Giants battled somewhat in this game. Pittsburgh settled for field goals. The Giants settled for field goals. The game kind of turned on the punt return for a touchdown, which could have been a roughing the punter right there, but they let that one go, actually. I thought it was a pretty clear roughing the punter. I don't know how they let it go. But, you know, listen, the Giants are not going to win with Daniel Jones as their quarterback. I think we've kind of proven it now. I mean, I kind of like the kid. I didn't think he was as bad as he is, but I always rip him. He never puts together two good halves. He's not consistent throwing the ball and getting people open. They're trying to get the ball to neighbors. I give him credit. Tracy's the new number one at running back now. He's kind of earned it. That stuff's all good. But I just, they don't score touchdowns. If Tracy doesn't get a 45-yard run, they wouldn't have scored a touchdown there either. They need a long run to get the touchdown, G.
The Giants do what bad teams do. They find ways to constantly lose. They're not a good team, and this is what happens when you're not a good team. And Daniel Jones, again, I feel like I'm a broken record when I say this, but it is one read with him, and if nobody's there on after the first read when he's throwing the ball, he's either taken off, which is way too early, or he's throwing a bad pass, and that's what bad quarterbacks do. He's Kev,
2 fourth quarter turnovers.
Yeah,
the one, I mean, the strip sack by T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt does it to a lot of players.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then he overthrew the receiver by 5 yards to let Beanie Bishop get the last interception.
Not even close.
But two drives that they had a chance, down 8, chance to tie the game. And he fails to deliver again.
And one last point. I'm sorry, Kev. Go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
And then you got Dable on the sideline screaming his head off the whole freaking game.
He's a moron.
And
you know why? Because when they scored the touchdown to cut it to 23 to 15, why are you going for two?
Mathematics say if you go for two, then you have a chance to win. And then if you miss,
stop with the two.
Take your freaking point. Point after touchdown, unless you need the two.
Because now you have to go for two the second time. And if you decide to go for two at the end of the game because you tied it up, all the power to you. On the road, you do it. But right now, you play it where you have the option to go for, because you don't know who gets hurt on that last play. You don't know what the hell's going on. You don't know who's fatigued and who can't go back in. You don't know what happens in between. So you don't sit there and rush the two now, because you might need it later because you don't have the energy, or you might have to kick the extra point because your defense has suddenly showed up and stopped them for the last two drives. And so you could go a million ways with it.
And it was a great two-point play call. I don't know what the hell that was.
They got crushed. And Dable's an offensive genius. Just let part of that stupid Belichick tree. Mangini in blue. I don't know. This team is just not, they play hard on the road, and at home they embarrass themselves. Good luck for you this weekend, Gino.
All right, let's highlight a couple of games. We're going to go right to my team right now. Washington beats Chicago 18-15. Washington moves to 6-2 atop the NFC East. Rookie Jaden Daniels led the Commanders to a thrilling victory with a 52-yard Hail Mary touchdown to Noah Brown as time expired. They're calling it, Kev, the Hail Maryland, by the way. Despite playing through a rib injury, Daniels threw for 326 and one touchdown. He also ran the ball 8 times for 52 yards, a little bit much for me. He showed resilience. He had some clutch playmaking. For the Bears, Caleb Williams struggled with offensive consistency. They took 8 penalties, 60 yards. The only bright spot for the Bears was DeAndre Swift, who was 18 for 129 with a touchdown. Washington outgained Chicago 481 to 307 in yardage in the game. So, good win by my Washington Commanders. Darren?
They controlled the game for the most part. Then they let Chicago get back into it. Not that Caleb looked great. I mean, he was 10 for 24 for 131, and with a fumble loss, but he let him back down. And they took the lead. One of the Bears cornerbacks, I'm blanking who it was, is sitting there taunting Tyreek Stevenson. Tyreek Stevenson is taunting the fans on the last play of the game. He's not paying attention. Didn't really have anything to do with it at the end. He got back in position, but what are you, stupid? What the hell's wrong with you? And sometimes good teams, they earn their own luck, and that's what happened for Washington this week. They got the ball up. Jaden's unable to be touched. He made a great, great throw. Ball got deflected the right way. Noah Brown just standing there by himself. Hit him in the hands. He caught it.
I'd love to see Washington bring in a cornerback for the deadline, by the way, to help this defense. Kev?
Yeah, they need it.
Early on, it was 12-0 because Washington kept settling for field goals, kept Chicago in the game. I'll give Caleb Williams was bad. I mean, beyond bad for 3 quarters.
He was.
I'll give him credit for a rookie to turn around in the fourth quarter. He went 6 for 8 in the fourth quarter on the last 2 drives. Terrible play call. That quick handoff to the offensive lineman playing fullback fumbled at the goal line. Like they were saying on TV, you've got to turn around, hand it to him, make sure he has it. He can't do this quick stuff. Or you forget that, push, other stuff. Simple something. Stuff.
Don't give it to a running back and let him score like he's supposed to do.
But then after the fumble, they held, and Caleb Williams got them back down the field and scored the touchdown 25 seconds left. Then Eberflus screwed up.
Yeah.
I don't care what his comments were after the game. The play before the Hail Mary, they were back at the 30-yard line, 35-yard line.
Approximately.
5 seconds left. He drops everybody back. Gives Washington a free 13 yards to 4 seconds. Great play. That all of a sudden got them close enough so that, Daniels also had 15 seconds to throw that Hail Mary.
Well,
plenty of time for him to get down there. And because they were 13 yards closer, he could reach the end zone.
Kev, that's a great point that he had all that time because
they rushed
they rushed 2 guys.
Yeah.
They gave him all the time to put the ball up in the air. And then when you put the ball up, anything can happen at that point. You got, 10 guys back there trying to tip a ball up or down.
Sometimes you make your own luck. I'm just saying. Yeah. These teams, I also don't love just rushing 3 and having 8 back. I'd rather rush the 4th guy.
I agree.
Make them not have time to set. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah, not only that, not only set, Darren, but you got to give the guys a chance to run 45, 50 yards in a lot of those Hail Marys.
Yep.
There's not even enough time if you're rushing 4 guys. So Washington comes out with the win. They have a lead now, 1-game lead over the Eagles for atop the NFC East. All right, let's touch on a couple other games. Cleveland beat Baltimore 29-24. Baltimore drops to 5-3. Cleveland 2-6. Jameis Winston, his first start for Cleveland, threw a last-minute 38-yard touchdown pass to Cedric Tillman for the upset win. It ended a Ravens five-game losing streak. Winston had three touchdowns, 334 yards. Gave the Browns a little hope now for the rest of the year, overshadowing Deshaun Watson's bad play and his injury. Cleveland held Baltimore, by the way, to 124 yards on the ground. This is well under their 210-game average through the first seven games. So Cleveland defense played really well. Jameis had a good game, and they get the win. Darren?
Well, we've been saying that Winston should have been playing for a long time.
Yeah.
It gives them a different element. Deshaun Watson's overmatched as a quarterback right now. He's not even – I mean, now he's out. I mean, but before that, he wasn't that good. Cleveland has a capable defense if given the opportunity to be in games, and the offense wasn't giving them that chance. You saw that Cleveland, who was a playoff team last year, you know, is solid. And with Flacco. I mean, yeah. James is never going to be great, but 27-41 for 334 and three touchdowns is pretty good to me.
Well, yeah. You almost have the full Jameis experience.
Yeah, he's a train wreck ready to happen, but he's good.
Baltimore dropped a couple of picks, but they dropped him. That's why they play defense. But yep. Jameis Winston gives you a chance on offense to put up some points.
Yeah, and listen, and Cleveland's got Chubb back now. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and like you said, when I saw the stats, you know, it was like Henry, 12 carries, 70 yards. It was like. Defense. If you hold Derrick Henry under 80 yards,
you're doing something right.
Keep Jackson in check. Like I said, 120 yards rushing to Baltimore is terrific.
You're doing something right at that point, Kev.
Well, that front is solid. It has been for a couple of years now.
Okay. San Francisco beat Dallas 30-24. San Francisco now gets even. They're back to 4-4. 49ers overcame a slow start thanks to a dominant third quarter in which Purdy led them for three touchdown drives. They had a late defensive stand in that game to secure the win. Even though Prescott had a couple of late comeback attempts, San Francisco defense held strong. Dallas is at 3-4. San Francisco's at 4-4. Darren?
These two teams are a shell of themselves. This is not what anybody expected. These are not great teams right now. Garendo was the surprise of the game. I thought he played really well coming in for Mason. And
Once Mason got injured, yeah.
And Lamb is, you know, as a number one target, usually San Francisco is able to take away a guy like that, and they were not able to do that in this game. 13 for 146 and two touchdowns on 17 targets. Kittle was big the other way.
Yep.
And again, Dak Prescott just doesn't make enough plays down the stretch.
No.
Again. Not what you want to see from the highest paid player in the NFL.
Offensive line is a shell of itself in Dallas too. Right,
that used to be such a strength of their team.
And the D line can't stop the run. By the way, I mean,
they can't run the ball at all. But then again, what do you expect with Cook and Elliott?
Yeah. All right, Kansas City goes to 7-0. They beat Las Vegas 27-20. Mahomes passes for 262-2. Casey had a critical defensive stand in the game. It's a first and goal stop, and they held Las Vegas to only 33 yards on the ground. They get the win. They're now 7-0. I'll give you the other game. The Rams beat Minnesota 30-20. So Minnesota, who was 5-1, is now 5-2. Kupp and Nacua back from injury. Stafford threw for four touchdown passes to keep playoff hopes alive for the Rams at this point. Darren?
Just in Kansas City, they're such a defensive team now. Mahomes actually played relatively well in this game. The only interception was a deflected ball. He was go back to passing the end zone and just got tipped. Just one of those things. On the Minnesota, the one thing that stood out, I mean, I'm a guy that liked the Rams a lot. But Minnesota is – and I like them in this game too, by the way. But Minnesota, the face mask on Darnold that wasn't called.
But yeah,
it's almost terrible. Like they thought he was still terrible. Wearing green. It's almost like they thought he was a Jet. They can't throw the call.
That looks awful.
I mean, that was about as bad as you get two guys staring right at it. Nobody sees that. His head got jerked. I mean, I was rooting for the Rams, and I was like, what the hell was that? So that threw me off a little bit. Listen, the Vikings are still a very good team. So are the Chiefs. The Chiefs are not what they were. They're not a dominant juggernaut. But you have to feel that with the injuries that they lost their top two wide receivers. They lose their number one running back. You know, their left tackle at the start of the season already got benched, so they have a backup that didn't win the job in camp. So the Chiefs have dealt with a little bit of some issues. Now they lost Jalen Watson, their starting cornerback. So they've dealt with a lot of guys that are lost for long term. Pacheco will be back, but the rest of them, even Smith-Schuster, they brought off the scrap heap to be their top receiver. Yeah. He got hurt.
So they also made two trades. They brought in Hopkins.
And they brought in Uche.
And, yeah, this week they brought in Uche from the Pats.
Another pass rusher. But this team defensively is really, really good. And, you know, Kelce, Hopkins, Worthy, Hunt is not a bad foursome now. It seems like it's getting better as the season goes on.
Yep. Okay, I'll go through a couple of games. We'll make a couple of mentions of stuff. Green Bay beats Jacksonville 30-27. They moved to 6-2. Love went down with an injury in that game. Undecided. It looks like it could be just a couple of weeks with the groin injury. So we'll see how that plays out.
But Willis came in and did a good job of getting them in position for that last field goal to pull out the game.
Yep. Houston, they moved to 6-2. They beat Indy 23-20. Stephon Diggs out for the year. ACL tear. Darren?
Hey, Darren, what do you think of Anthony Richardson?
Is there a worse player in the NFL playing quarterback than Anthony freaking Richardson? Not only just by stats. 10 for 32 for 175 and a touchdown and a pick. Sacked five times. Lost a fumble. He also pulled himself out of the game because he was tired. What? And now striking is non-committed to him because he can't, because the team's got to be livid if they play this idiot. You got Flacco, who led the team to the playoffs last year, sitting there. The team's so much better with him. Instead, they're trying to develop a guy that's a moron. Listen, when he got drafted, I told you he sucked. Kev, you agreed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Gino, not that Gino didn't agree. He just didn't follow him in college like me and Kev did.
Yep.
And it's just getting worse every time you watch it. He was inaccurate at Florida. He was going to turn it on in the pros.
But 1 year as a starter at Florida, and he completed what, 54% roughly.
Yeah, Florida, where the guy stands there and you throw it to him because you're a freaking, you know. I mean, this. I mean, Texans are, you know, listen, they're not what they were last year, and losing Diggs hurts, especially with Collins already out. But you know. They should have covered this game. They fumbled late too. They should have went up and gave me my cover, sons of bitches. But besides that, I needed was a field goal. I would have won 26-20.
And now today came out that Flacco's getting the start this week over Richardson.
Yeah. He had to be non-committal to him because he was like, I didn't know that must have happened after I looked. But originally he was like, I'm not making the commitment. But now the Colts are better.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he has to face a Minnesota pass rush that's good, but he has a great O line. So that's the problem. I mean, Richardson has a great O line too. The Indianapolis O line is top five in the league. Anyway, sorry, G.
All right. Atlanta beats Tampa Bay. They move to 5-3. They win 31-26. Arizona gets the win over Miami 28-27. They move to 4-4. Drop Miami to 2-5. Everybody only has two wins in the AFC East, except for the Bills. They beat Seattle this week, 31-10. They moved to 6-2. Darren?
Yeah, the only thing about Arizona, nice comeback by them on the road, by the way. Tua was back. Shane had a pretty good game, rushing and receiving. They only sacked Tua once, thank God. But Arizona made a big play late. They had a third down, and Murray was able to scramble and cut through a few guys to really bleed the clock down to the 1 second when they kicked the winning field goal. Otherwise, Miami would have had another shot. Again, you saw he'll catch six balls, which is a lot for him lately because Tua's back. You think Miami will figure out a way, but they dug themselves a hole too at 2-5. So let's see if they're able to dig out of it like the Jets. The Bills already have a four-game lead in the division, 3.5, I'm sorry. But it's right there already.
Yeah.
Philadelphia beat Cincinnati 37-17. They moved to 5-2. Hurts had three running touchdowns and a passing touchdown. Chargers beat the New Orleans Saints 26-8. They moved to 4-3. Denver beat Carolina 28-14. They moved to 5-3. And Detroit put a beating on Tennessee 52-14. They moved to 6-1. Tennessee drops to 6-1. Tennessee, first off, Detroit had only 225 yards of offense in the game. Tennessee had four turnovers in the game. So that shows you something. But the time of possession, Tennessee had the ball 35 minutes. Detroit only had the ball 24 minutes. They were able to put up 52 points. So it's a pretty lopsided victory, Kev.
Some of the interesting stats here. The Lions were the first team in NFL history to win by 30 where they were outgained by 150. They scored 52 despite only 225 yards of offense. The second fewest in the 50-point game since the 1941 Green Bay Packers. I remember that team well.
That's unbelievable.
61 net passing yards. Second fewest ever in the 50-point game. Only the 1950 Giants.
Wow.
Four touchdown drives less than 25 yards. Five touchdown drives less than 30 yards. That's how you do that. And five touchdown drives of four or fewer plays.
The game was 14-14.
And then
I didn't leave it there. The game was 14-14.
I mean, just unbelievable the turnovers.
They're
just
so explosive. And
can't give this team possessions.
Oh like my God. They're so explosive. You just can't. Yeah. And you know, Goff is so accurate right now, 12-15 in this one. You know, not that he had to throw it a lot, but he threw three touchdowns into 75 yards or whatever he threw it for, 80 yards, whatever it was. Crazy.
Only other thing to mention with the NFL for me is a couple of trades also happened. The Ravens wound up picking up Deontay Johnson, wide receiver from Carolina. And the Vikings brought in Cam Robinson from the Jaguars. He's a tackle, left tackle. So a couple of other points I had. Any NFL points, guys, before we close out NFL?
I'm pretty good.
Pretty weak this week.
Last week had such brutal games. This week the games were all close and competitive at least.
Yeah,
last week was awful.
This week's games don't look.
There's a couple. There's a couple to catch,
but not that many.
So I agree.
Texans are at the Jets Thursday night.
Yay.
Ravens host the Broncos. Giants host the Commanders. Falcons host the Cowboys. And the other one for me on this was the Packers host the Lions. That's probably the game of the week.
That's the game of the week. Yep.
I even think Chicago, Arizona is a decent one, and Denver, Baltimore, because both are 5-3, is a decent one. But that's really
it. All right, let's head over, Darren. Let's head over to you for some college football talk.
Oh, as we enter November this week, it's time to do it a little differently. We're going to mix it up. We're going to talk about the teams that are still alive for the 12-team playoff, which we've never seen before. It used to be a 14 playoff, and there'd be like five teams alive. Right now, you're still alive with two losses, one loss, stuff like that. So it's a totally different animal. I'm going to start with the SEC. We're going to start with Kev. Kev, what's going on in the SEC?
SEC, surprisingly, nobody's undefeated in the SEC. Everybody's got at least one loss or two losses and more than that. The leader of the conference right now is Texas A&M. They're 5-0, only undefeated team within the conference. They're 7-1 overall. They lost their opener to Notre Dame. They've reeled off seven in a row now. They just came off a big win this past weekend against LSU. This was a 17-7. They were losing at halftime, and Wegman looked awful at quarterback. The offense was stagnant. They had nothing going. They went to Marcel Reed, ran to a lot of these RPO option-type plays. He only threw the ball twice in the second half, completed both for 70 yards, ran 9 times for 62 yards and 3 touchdowns, and led them to 31 second-half points. They beat LSU 38-23. Huge win for them. Looking ahead, they've got a tricky game this week at South Carolina under the lights at Williams-Brice. And I'll be there. Looking forward to seeing that game. They have New Mexico State, Auburn, and then finish up with a big one at home against Texas. Looking at Texas now, they're 3-1 in the conference, 7-1 overall. Their only loss was at home against Georgia. Couple of big wins. You know, we didn't know in week two that a win at Michigan was not going to be as big, but they did have the win at the Big House. They crushed Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry this past weekend. You know, a feisty Vanderbilt team on the road. They won 27-24. Little skewed there because they did give it the late touchdown. It was 27-17 late. Ewers had a pretty good game, 288 and 3 touchdowns. They have the bye week, then Florida, at Arkansas, Kentucky, and finish up at Texas A&M. So you've got a really good chance of these two teams winning out and meeting up in the last game of the season, Texas against Texas A&M. The winner goes to the SEC championship game. Winner is pretty much guaranteed, I think, a spot in the college football playoff game. And if they both win out the rest of their games, I still think the loser, even with two losses, probably still makes a 12-team field, unless you get blown out in either the matchup against each other or whoever makes the SEC championship game. Darren, any comments between those two?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. What you're saying is so true, because when you go down the stretch for both of these teams, there's a couple of good games. I mean, Texas had a little bit more, you know, because there's a road game at Texas A&M. But, you know, Florida's not, you lose to Florida out of nowhere, that hurts you. You lose at Arkansas, that hurts you.
Yep.
You know, you obviously can't lose to Kentucky, even though Mississippi has. So you don't know. And then the same thing with A&M. South Carolina's a tough game this week because it's under the lights. You get the bye, then New Mexico State. Then you have to go to Auburn, which you should win. And then you get Texas. But if they lose two of those games, they have three losses, and they might even still play in the championship game and not get in if they don't win it. Yep. So there's a lot going on with that kind of stuff.
Now, the other 2-1-loss teams there in the SEC, Georgia, they're 6-1 overall, 4-1 in the conference. Their only loss was that crazy Alabama game where they blew the big lead and was back and forth at the end there. They've got two of the best wins in the country, though. They beat Clemson early in the year, opening night. Destroyed them 34-3, and then they won at Texas just a couple weeks ago here. Now, their schedule, they still have Florida this week, you know, world's largest outdoor cocktail party, always a big game for them. At Ole Miss versus Tennessee before they finish up UMass and Georgia Tech. Tennessee, they're also 6-1, 3-1 in the conference. They lost at Arkansas, probably the worst loss of any of these four teams we've mentioned. They've got wins. You know, NC State were ranked at the time. Oklahoma was ranked at the time. Their biggest win was a couple weeks ago against Alabama at home. Huge win there, 24-17. They still play Kentucky, Mississippi State at home, at Georgia, UTEP, and at Vandy. Much the same way as Texas, Texas A&M. I think you've got the same situation, Georgia, Tennessee. Winner of that game, again, likely makes the SEC championship game if they're able to take care of business in their other games. The winner of Georgia-Tennessee is pretty much locked in to the college football playoff. The loser, again, if they don't lose that badly, it's two losses. If that's the only loss, I think they still are in. So I think those four teams, as long as they take care of business besides the big matchups, Texas versus A&M and Georgia versus Tennessee, I think those four are relatively safe. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, again, the one thing that we notice, I mean these teams don't, like I said, they don't play a lot of great teams down the stretch. You got one or two that you have to win, and you can't afford to have a bad loss because there's so many teams in your conference now that, you know, it's just not the same. And some of these bad teams are actually good teams. They're just in the wrong conference. So,
yeah.
But I agree with your four teams. I agree 100%.
Now you've got four other two-loss teams that are still at least somewhat alive. I think this weekend you've got LSU and Alabama. They're off this weekend, both of them. They play basically a loser is done match in 2 weeks in LSU. LSU.
Give Gino Alabama. The loser leave town match. He wants to hear it like that. Come on, don't do the loser.
The loser leave town match.
Give the wrestling fan what he needs. Come on.
There you go. LSU, the two losses, USC first week at Texas A&M this past weekend. They've got a win against Ole Miss, which knocks Ole Miss down, I think, in pecking order. Alabama, they've lost at Vandy, at Tennessee. They do have wins against Georgia. And this past weekend, they crushed Missouri 34-0, outgained them 2-1, 486 to 239. So besides the game against each other, LSU still plays at Florida, Vandy, and Oklahoma. Alabama plays Mercer at Oklahoma and Auburn in the Iron Bowl. So again, loser, done. Winner is still at least in consideration, depending on what the top four teams do.
Yep, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Again, you know, but like you said, that third loss knocks whoever it is that loses that game out. And the game's in Death Valley, and I'm assuming it's a night game. I don't know 100%.
I would assume so, too. And then the other two, you know, Ole Miss, I think on the periphery, they don't have any wins against ranked teams. They've lost to Kentucky at home. They've lost at LSU. They play at Arkansas, home for Georgia, which is an absolute, absolute must-win for Ole Miss. At Florida, Mississippi State, they need to run the table, would give them a terrific win against Georgia, see where the chips fall with the rest of the teams. But I think they've got no choice but to run the table and look impressive doing it as well. It's not just about going 4-0. It's about going 4-0. Beat Georgia any way you can and dominate the other three. Missouri, they're 6-2 also, but they don't have the resume that even Ole Miss has. They've lost at Texas A&M, at Alabama. the only win. They beat a 24th ranked BC team at the time. That was early in the season. Other than that, you know, the rest of the schedule, they play Oklahoma, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, Arkansas. Again, SEC, you're still looking at competitive teams, but nothing that really jumps out at you. I think Missouri is that close to falling out.
I think they're out because of the 34-0 loss to Bama. I think they got blown out. I think you get blown out like that, people see it. It's not a good thing. And the BC win, as nice as it might have been,
at the time,
they were down. They were down big. They needed a major comeback to do that. They had a struggle against Vandy before we knew Vandy was pretty good.
Yep. I mean, like I said, that was sort of the last team just barely on the periphery.
I get it. I totally get it, bro.
Anybody else in the SEC, or is that pretty much it for you, Dan?
That would be it. I don't think any other team has a shot.
Yep.
I'm going to talk about the Big Ten real quick. Yeah, absolutely. So Big Ten, I only think there's four teams that are alive for the playoff. You got Oregon, who's 8-0, 5-0 in the conference. You got Penn State, who's 7-0, 4-0 in the conference. You got Ohio State, 6-1, 3-1 in the conference. And Indiana, 8-0 and 5-0 in the conference. And what happens is Michigan has played themselves out of it. You know, barring some sort of a miracle for them, I don't even think they win this week against Oregon, but then they would have to go to Ohio State. They'd have to win both. I think it would be too much for them. For Oregon, listen, they're in the driver's seat in the conference. They have to go to Michigan this week, which you wouldn't have thought in the beginning of the year, but they'll be a nice 15-point favorite going into that one.
Yeah.
They have Maryland at home. They have to go to Wisconsin to get a bye, and then they get Washington at home. Now, they never really beat Washington. It's a team that usually finds a way to beat Oregon, but I have a hunch that Oregon could really run this table right here. Penn State plays the game of the week this week. They play Ohio State. A loss by Penn State doesn't kill them as long as they don't get embarrassed. A loss by Ohio State puts them on the periphery. I mean, they have no room for error if they lose that game. Penn State's got Ohio State, Washington, at Purdue, at Minnesota, and Maryland. The at Minnesota game is tricky just because the Gophers are starting to play a little bit better. They still don't have the talent to compete with Penn State. But apparently Aller's a complete game sign decision. We'll get to that a little bit later, but that's a big part of this, losing their quarterback last week. Ohio State got Penn State, like we said, on the road. They got Purdue at Northwestern, Indiana at home, and then Michigan. And their only loss was at Oregon and probably one of the games of the year.
Yeah.
So can't get too worked up with that. It was a one-point loss in a game that they could have won. How it slides a second earlier, it's a different game. Indiana has been the surprise of the nation to me. 8-0, 5-0. Without Rourke, no real problem this week. They still found a way to win it with the backup quarterback Jackson, which was great. They go to Michigan State this week, which could be a challenge on the road. They get Michigan. They get a bye. They have to go to Ohio State, which is their season, to see if they're going to be in the championship game or not. And then they get Purdue in the old Oak and Bucket game, Gino. It's always important when they play. So these are the four teams I see. Kev, anything different on with you in the Big Ten?
No, those are the four teams I see also. I think the big thing with Indiana, great story, undefeated so far, but the problem is that their strength of schedule so far, they haven't played the upper echelon of the Big Ten. The only team they really have up there is Ohio State, the 23rd.
And the problem is they don't play anybody else. They just have Ohio State. I mean,
just the way their schedule worked out this year.
Yeah, absolutely. But I still think if they go 11-1, I think they find their way in.
They have to get in 11-1 in the Big Ten. Come on.
Agreed.
The other three, Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State, barring some sort of major miracle. Well, three of them feel like they're pretty safe to be in as well.
Absolutely. All right. Why don't you talk ACC a little bit, Kev?
Yep, so ACC, I think we're still looking at four teams here. I'll start with the two on the outside a little bit more, Pitt and SMU. The big problem with the ACC is these teams have not really played each other at all, the top four. So they've avoided each other. Nobody has really a standout win at all in the ACC. So this weekend, Pitt, SMU, at SMU, Pitt 7-0, SMU 7-1. Even though they're 7-0, Pitt's only ranked 18th, SMU is ranked 20th. SMU's loss was a good loss. They lost to BYU 18-15. But other than that, there's no big wins against anybody. SMU had to survive 28-27 in overtime against Duke this past weekend. Duke missed a two-point conversion in overtime. After this weekend, you know, if SMU beats Pitt, I think Pitt's sort of eliminated there. If Pitt wins, they have a chance for the big win in 2 weeks after that when they play Clemson at home. That assuming they can get by SMU this weekend, that is their season. If Pitt is able to beat Clemson, now you're talking a good chance for maybe a third ACC team to get in there. The other two that I think are pretty well set, Miami, I think, is in. They're 8-0. They're coming off a relatively easy for a change 36-14 win over Florida State. You know, seems like the last few weeks they've had to outscore teams because their defense can be a little shaky at times. Again, no wins against ranked teams. They finish off Duke at Georgia Tech versus Wake at Syracuse. You know, maybe a tricky game there, here or there, but again, not a difficult schedule. They have a real good chance to be 12-0 going into the ACC championship game. Clemson, off the opening loss to Georgia, no wins against ranked teams. They've got Louisville at Vatek, at Pitt, Citadel, and finish off against South Carolina. Again, at Pitt's a huge, huge game there. If Clemson wins that game, that's guaranteed. I think they're in as the second team, knocks Pitt out. If Pitt wins that game and if they win SMU, now you've got a decision. Are you going to put Pitt in over Clemson? If Pitt especially runs the table until the ACC championship game? Or are you going to put Clemson with two losses? I mean, that's when it gets a little tricky in the ACC. Darren, what do you think?
I think it's the same four teams. I'm going to let Pitt hang around a little longer than you, even if they lose this week, because the Clemson game could still turn it for me. SMU, again, doesn't have a huge schedule down the stretch, you know, because there are these, you know, natural rivalries against Boston College, Virginia, Cal, and BYU. BYU was their loss, I'm sorry, and Cal with the bye week. You know, Pitt still has, you know, it's a road game. They're a 7.5-point dog in this one, but I do think that they're alive in this game. Thing about Pitt, best record they've had since Marino in 82. Unfortunately, they finished 9-3 that year. They crumbled down the stretch, and Marino fell in the draft a little bit. I think that all four teams are alive. But I think that Pitt SMU loser, if SMU loses, they're done. If Pitt loses, they have to beat Clemson to even stay around. Clemson's got two tricky ones because the South Carolina game is a rivalry game and anything can happen. Not that South Carolina historically has done well against Clemson, but
they won there 2 years ago.
They did win there 2 years ago, exactly. Just to go through the Big 12, which is one of the more intriguing conferences in the country right now. And I have four teams still alive, even though the fourth one's on life support. So I'll start with them. Colorado, 6-2 and 4-1. They have a bye this week. Then they go to Texas Tech. They get Utah at Kansas, Oklahoma State. They've lost at home to Kansas State, and they got blown out at Nebraska. But they're playing well right now. Travis Hunter was the offensive and defensive player of the week, both in this week, which you don't see very often. He won both awards. The funny thing about it is Utah's falling apart, Kansas is falling apart, and Oklahoma State's falling apart. These were three teams we thought were going to be at the top, and now they're three teams at the bottom. Makes that schedule look maintainable. They should be able to get through it. K-State, 7-1, 4-1, okay? They got to go to Houston. They get a bye. They get Arizona State, Cincinnati, and then Farmageddon, Gino. They go to Iowa State and Farmageddon, always a thrill when those two teams meet. And that's actually a big game for both Kansas State and Iowa State to see who's going to play in the Big 12 championship game. You get Iowa State, who's 7-0, 4-0. Rocco Becht, Anthony's son, they got Texas Tech at Kansas, Cincinnati at Utah, and then they close with Kansas State. And BYU, who's the surprising leader, 8-0, 5-0, with a win over Kansas State, by the way, blowout win, 38-9. They got a bye. They go to Utah, which is tricky because it's, you know, the Mormon
rivalry game. Yep.
You got Kansas, you got Arizona State on the road, and you get Houston. So the thing is, it looks like BYU should find their way to an undefeated season the way the schedule works out. Anything can happen, though. A game against Arizona State can be tricky. Utah on the road can always be tricky. Iowa State, that game against Kansas State is huge for Kansas State. They can't afford to lose it. Iowa State, if they want to play in the championship game, can't afford to lose that game either. And because head-to-head is one of the first tiebreakers to decide who the two teams are. Colorado is going to need everything to break right for them. And Kansas State can't afford another loss. They might be able to survive a loss at Iowa State, but that's about it. Those are the four teams, I think, in the Big 12. Kev, any thoughts?
No, you nailed it perfectly there. You know, it's BYU, like you said, especially with that schedule, should make the championship game. Iowa State, Kansas State is such a huge game to determine, you know, who's got the tie break, basically, even though they don't have a true tie break. It's really the head-to-head there among the committee there. And Colorado, you know, Deion, Shedeur Sanders, Hunter, they've got enough names that you never know if they run the table and look really good. And you get some names in there too. You know, they could be attractive as, you know, more of a spectacle than maybe even deserving it as it on the field. You never know how the committee's going to think.
And they'll play well offensively.
You get Deion Sanders and Shedeur Sanders and Hunter out there in a playoff game, that could draw some eyeballs, some additional ones.
Yeah, especially in early rounds, Kev.
Yeah.
Especially in the early rounds. And now independents, Kev. Why don't we just run through a couple of those?
Yeah, a couple of them. Notre Dame, they're 7-1. They still have the worst loss by anybody, I think, in college football this year. They lost to Northern Illinois at home. Just a dreadful loss. That almost counts as two losses to me. It was that bad of a loss. They did win the opening day at Texas A&M. They beat, you know, a 15th ranked at the time, Louisville. They beat Navy last week, who was ranked 24th, 51-14. Six turnovers by Navy. And you know the armed forces can't turn over the ball six times against a good team and expect to be competitive. Never mind win. The rest of the schedule, they play Florida State, Virginia. They've got Army at Yankee Stadium, which is a big game for both teams, and at USC, rivalry game, end of the season at USC. Now, if Notre Dame is able to run the table, are you going to keep an 11-1 Notre Dame team out of the playoffs, even with the Northern Illinois loss?
Probably not.
I would say no. I'd say they'll get in, but the USC game is tricky. You figure they're better than Army, but the USC game is the tricky one for them.
Yep, but I think they have to run the table to have any chance.
I agree. They can't afford one loss.
Two losses, with one of them being Northern Illinois, I think knocks them out. Boise State, 6-1 in the Mountain West. Their only loss was a terrific game at Oregon, 37-34.
At the gun.
Now, they're going to be probably the highest ranked so far of the group of five conferences who get the automatic bid. No ranked wins, but couple things going for them. The schedule the rest of the way: San Diego State, Nevada, at San Jose State, at Wyoming, and then home against Oregon State. Very winnable games for all five. They escaped this past weekend with a win at UNLV. Ashton Gianti with a touchdown in the fourth quarter to give them the win. That was a real tricky game, I thought, for Boise State at UNLV. They were able to pull that one out. And like I said, another one, star power, is Boise State, and they've got Ashton Gianti, who is maybe slowed down the last week or two, but he's been on pace for most of the season to break Barry Sanders' records. So absolutely, I think Boise State right now is in the lead as that automatic bid for that Group of Five conference. Then the one team to look out for is still Army. They're 7-0, still perfect. Now, they do have one of the worst schedules in the country, I think. Liberty might be about the only one that has a worse schedule, but they have been undefeated. They're averaging 40 points a game. The rest of the schedule, they're at Air Force this weekend.
No, they're home for that game.
They're home for Air Force, yeah. And in a rare spread here, they're favored by 22 against Air Force. You never see that.
It's not a great Air Force team.
It's not Fisher DeBerry anymore. No. After Air Force, they're at North Texas. Then Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium, finish off at UTSA. Then they're likely, right now, they have a good shot at the conference championship game. And funny enough, there's a chance they could be playing Navy, because Navy is still undefeated in the conference. They're at Rice, at USF, home for Tulane, at ECU. That Tulane-Navy matchup is going to determine probably the second team in the American Athletic championship game. You could really have Army-Navy in the championship game, and then the week after still play Army-Navy traditional game. So a couple of chances there for Army, you know, to possibly slip up. I think Army really needs to run the table, and if they run the table, they've got a huge win against Notre Dame then. And that puts them at least in the conversation. You know, they have to get by Boise State. That's what it is. Anybody else there, Darren?
Well, there's two teams I'd say, and I'm going to throw Navy in, even though they got blown out this week with the six turnovers, only because – they have a chance. If Army beats Notre Dame, which is a huge if, and Navy beats Army twice, you have to consider them. I'm not saying they're in, but you have to consider them. Outside of that, they go to Rice this week. They go to USF. They host Tulane, which is a good team, so that's not an easy one. They go to East Carolina. and then they have Army. And if they get through this, they'll have Army twice, most likely. So that would be interesting. If Army happened to beat Notre Dame and lost to Navy twice, it would be something to watch. The other team I look at, and it's a little bit of a freak, though, is Washington State. They're 7-1. The only loss was at Boise State, where the game was really close until the fourth quarter, and Boise State kind of pulled away. They have Utah State. They go to New Mexico. They go to Oregon State, and they host Wyoming to end the season. They're the Pac-2. You wonder if they start feeling bad for them, that they've been abandoned by everybody. And if Boise State slips up and has two losses to Washington State's one, Notre Dame slips up, Army slips up, you know, they could sneak in. I don't think it's likely, but they would need a lot of help. But Washington State, I wouldn't call them dead. They're ranked now. They're 22nd, and they're 7-1. So those would be the teams that we think still are alive right now. Next week, there'll be a few less. Kev?
Now, let me ask you a question. When do the college football playoff teams get announced? Is it after the conference weekend, the conference championship weekend?
I believe it is
after the conference after.
Yes, I do think it's right after the conference championship weekend.
But before the Army-Navy game.
I believe it's before the Army-Navy game, from what I understand. Which is really silly, but they want to keep the Army-Navy game on the pedestal.
Yep.
So they want to make sure that that's the only game playing for the week. I doubt they're going to hold off an extra week. They might sit there and they might do one of those slash marks. You know, Notre Dame slash Army or Boise State slash Army. You know, you never know what they're going to do. But it'll be interesting to see. Okay, three games this week. We have a lot on college football this week, so sorry. Texas A&M at South Carolina under the lights of Willie Bryce. A&M's a 2.5-point favorite at this point.
Yeah.
Started off at 3.5, went down a little bit. Kev, thoughts on this one?
Well, I'd rather be facing Wegman than Reed, coming off the way they looked this past weekend. Tricky game again under the lights at Willie B. South Carolina's defense is really good. The question is going to be if Sellers can handle Texas A&M's defense or not.
Yeah, to me, the South Carolina front four is excellent on the outside, and sometimes they can get run on.
Yep.
Texas A&M runs it well. So they're going to need big games from the D-tackles to win this game. I do think that they have a shot. Both teams defensively are really strong. This is going to come down to turnovers. Whoever holds on to the ball, which so far this season would not favor South Carolina.
Oh.
But, you know, this game will be interesting to see.
They're going to need Tonka Hemingway to establish inside.
They're going to do that in a big way. The second one is Pitt at SMU, and we mentioned that. You got Pitt undefeated, SMU 7-1. Both obviously undefeated in conference here. Winner stays alive to play, to go fight another day, play Clemson or Miami in the championship. This is SMU's biggest remaining test while Pitt hosts Clemson in a couple weeks. The spread's 7.5 last I saw by SMU. Who do you got?
I think that's too many. I like Pitt in this game, at the very least to cover. I think Pitt probably has a great chance of winning this game outright. I know SMU's good, they're at home, but I like Pitt.
I do too. I think Pitt wins the game outright. SMU, by the way, last week turned the ball over 5 times and beat Duke by a point. I know that game was only close because SMU couldn't hold on to the football. And then the big one. We're gonna go to all three of us on this one. Happy Valley, Gino. Joe Pa. Got number 4, Ohio State coming to town, the State College. Take on number 3, Penn State. So Ohio State comes in. They're favored by 4 on the road last I saw. Will Howard leads this Ohio State team with only one loss, that very close loss to Oregon. They struggled against Nebraska last week. They could not get it going, but off a bye, and they had a bye the week before, so you don't know if that helped them or hurt them. On the other side, Aller got hurt last week, the starting quarterback for Penn State. The running game is lethal, but Ohio State usually pretty good against the run. Both these teams could probably be thrown on better than run on. Both teams have really good defenses. Ohio State has the great core wide receiver led by the freshman Jeremiah Smith. Abuka also on the other side. They're great. Great front seven led by Jack Sawyer. A lot going on here. Warren, the key tight end for Penn State. Gino, who escapes Happy Valley? And this game's at noon. This is not one of those under the lights. They go right at high noon at State College.
So let me just give you an update. So we are a total of 46 wins, 41 losses combined. I'm 18-11. Darren and Kevin, you're both 14-15 as we get into this week. So just a little update. I like Ohio State. Their only loss is to Oregon, and it's a 1-point loss. Penn State's only win versus ranked teams is against Illinois, who's number 19. I like Ohio State minus the 4 at Penn State. Kev?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, we have to pick Wednesday night when we're recording this. With Aller's unknown status, I don't think he can possibly at this point pick Penn State, not knowing about Aller. I think it's Ohio State minus 4.
Not so fast, my friends. I think 4 is a lot. I think Penn State is pretty good. I think that they can run the ball and play good defense. And I think that they'll be able to hang in this game enough. You know, Bo played well last week in the sophomore as a backup. Blanking on his last name, but Bo is his first name. He looked really good. He gives him a different element. He can run the ball really well. He's not going to throw it as well. But I think it puts a little bit of pressure on the Ohio State defense. I'm going to take Penn State to win the game outright. I don't want your freaking points. Penn State wins it by 3. You know, give me your other 2.
All right, I'm going back to Tennessee. I've been on Tennessee the whole time. They're home against Kentucky. Tennessee minus 16.5. They're coming off a big win versus Alabama a week ago. I like Tennessee minus 16.5, and I'm going for another big spread. I'm taking Georgia minus 16.5 at home against Florida. Florida's got 3 losses versus ranked teams. Georgia coming off the win against Texas. They're only lost to Alabama. I like Georgia in this game minus 16.5. Kev?
Yeah, I was surprised at the spread of that game. I mean, I know Florida's not as good as they usually are, but it's still a big rivalry game. Another one, I mean, before the season, would you ever think Oregon would be a 14.5-point favorite at the big house in Michigan? That's a surprisingly big number. Darren, are you taking Pitt in your picks?
I have him as one of the teams I could. You could take them. I have other options, too. So whatever you like.
I'm definitely taking Illinois. They're ranked 24th. They're at home. They're getting 3 points against Minnesota.
I'm surprised by that, too.
I'm shocked at that one. So I'm taking Illinois plus a 3 and willingly taking the field goal at home. And my third game, I'm going to go UNC minus 2.5 at Florida State. Florida State just looks terrible this year. I know UNC is not a great team. You may not like taking a great taking even a decent team on the road, but it's less than a field goal. Florida State's just bad. They're 1-7 bad. So I'm going to take UNC minus 2.5 on the road at Florida State.
All right. I'm going to go with Navy minus 11 against Rice. I just think they're better than Rice. I think they're going to bounce back after a really, really bad game last week. I think they're going to – I don't think Rice is going to be able to stop their dual threat of running and throwing now. And I'm going to take Pitt. I'm going to take Pitt plus a 7.5. I think they're going to win the game outright against SMU. Not easy to win in Dallas, but it's – you know, nonetheless, I still think Pitt's the better squad. And that's – a very, very long, elongated look at college football. Gino.
All right. So NHL, most teams have only played about 9 games except the Devils because of those extra couple of games they started with. Devils are 6-4-2 at the moment. Rangers are 6-2-1. Islanders 3-4-2. Heading up right now, these wins right now, Winnipeg is 8-1-0. Dallas 7-2-0. Las Vegas 7-2-1. Just 2 points I got. One, San Jose is at the moment the worst team in the league with only 6 points. They're 2-7-2 to start. Connor McDavid out 2 to 3 weeks with an ankle injury. And Ovechkin is 37 goals away from tying Wayne Gretzky's mark of 894 goals. So that's my only NHL points. It's very early in the season. Once baseball's over, we'll get into a lot of it. Darren, Kevin, any points on the NHL?
Just the Carolina and Vegas are the hottest teams. They've each won 4 in a row right now. You know, there's really not a lot to talk about. We're going to see more as time goes on.
Like you were saying, Winnipeg, they finally lost. They were 8-0 before losing to the Maple Leafs the other night. Another big injury, Colorado. They've lost their leading scorer, Ross Colton. He has 8 goals to start the season, 3rd in the NHL. He'll be out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken foot. So big loss for them as well. Like I said, bunch of teams off to decent starts. You mentioned a few of them. Islanders, just terrible. 3-4-2 start, not playing well. You know, Sorokin's actually played well in the pipe. Yeah. He's got 1.8 goals against, 931 save percentage. Varlamov's been terrible. 3.72 and an 854 save percentage. Those are not NHL quality numbers.
No, and they lost again tonight. Guess how many goals they scored?
Let me guess, zero.
I believe that was the final score here. They lost 2-0. I think the second one might have been an empty netter, though. And, just one of those things where this team just can't put the puck in the net. Yeah, four. Empty net goal, 70-57. And that was pretty much it. You know, again, Varlamov played well tonight, but nonetheless, okay, not enough.
But shutout loss already.
Yep. Devils, we said that this team needs scoring, and they just never seem to answer the bell. Once they start getting a couple guys going, they're usually very effective because of the way they play defense, but they need to score a little bit more.
Yep.
I think that's it for the NHL, G.
Okay. Couple of NBA points. So Boston, after today, is 4-1. Cleveland, 5-0. OKC is 3-0. They're playing right now. Locally, Knicks are 2-2 after tonight's win. And Brooklyn is 2-3 after tonight's win. Any NBA points, guys?
Yeah, Detroit and Utah still winless.
Yeah, for the Knicks, I mean, over the weekend, they took care of Indy pretty easily, 123-98. Wasn't really even that close. They led big after three. They're up by 30-plus, almost 40 points there. They lost to Cleveland over the weekend. They let Garland go for 34, including 15 in the fourth. That's a game that Brunson was 8 for 24 and Towns was 4 for 8. You know, Jalen, if you're not hitting the shot that well, get other guys involved. And I think Brunson even said after the game he needs to do a better job and make sure he gets other guys involved, including Towns. There's no way Towns should be only shooting 8 shots. So they lost by 6 there. Tonight they did beat Miami. Towns responded much better, 17 for 25 for 44 points.
Big game.
Two players I just want to mention, you know, an old name and a new name. Jokic, off to a good start. Triple-double the first game. 41 in the loss to the Clippers, then came back with 40 in a win at Toronto. First time he's gone 40-plus in two straight games. And then in the Brooklyn win over the weekend, 29, 18 rebounds, 16 assists as a triple-double. Only Oscar Robertson in a triple-double has reached those numbers.
Wow.
And a newer name, Paolo Banchero, had a terrific game the other night in a 119-115 win versus Indy. He had 37 at the half, finished with 50, 13 rebounds, and 9 assists.
Wow. Kid's a hell of a player. He really is.
Yep. So there's a future face for the NBA in Banchero.
Okay. Darren, we're going to talk a little Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a lot of huge races this weekend. We're going to really focus on the classic, maybe mention a couple other small things. 15 horses entered, only 14 can run in this one, so Rattle and Roll is still in the also eligible way to go. This is a very interesting classic for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, we didn't get the horses we expected to see, but at the same point in time, you know, we got a great race here. We got a lot of horses to like, a lot of international flavor, which we don't normally get in this race. So really cool. We got three horses from Japan. You know, you've got City of Troy from Ireland. I mean, you've got some really good horses coming from around, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. When you break it down, you know, there's a, you know, you can make a story for most of the horses in the race. You know, the one is Forever Young. 6 for 7 lifetime. His only loss was the Derby. He got bumped in the stretch. He could have won that race easily. Finished third by, what was it, a head? He barely lost that race. The two is one of those horses that that has not been as consistent. I'm blanking on who the two is for a second. I apologize. Where did I put the two? Highland Falls. I'm sorry. Highland Falls won a couple of races, but he's moving up in class a little bit. Don't know if it's a really right for this one. 5 wins and 9 starts, however. Number three is the favorite right now, City of Troy, the Irish horse. Has some good speed early. Favorite O'Brien, the trainer's 0-17 in the Breeders' Cup, and this horse has never run on the dirt. So, and he's 6 for 7 lifetime. So, yeah. I mean, he's the favorite, but he's never run on the dirt before. His father is Justified. Justify is a big-time horse, and the mother was a grass horse, so we'll see what happens there. The four, Mixto, dead closer, won the Pacific Classic, but he's definitely moving up in class, 30-1 morning line, so you don't know what to expect there. The five is, Senor Buscador. Buscador. Rosario and Pletcher. won the richest race in the world this year. And yet he's still a 30-1 shot in this race to tell you how good it is. He won in Dubai. The number six horse in this race is Derma Satagaki. He finished second in the Breeders last year. So he's run well here, but he hasn't had a good year. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him.
0-3 off the board this year.
Exactly. The seven, Ushpa Tesoro, the third of the Japanese horses. He's fresh. He's running well right now, and he's also another dead closer. So we'll see what happens there. The eight horse in this race, Pyrenees, get Hernandez and DeVoe. Four wins and 2 seconds in the last six, but he's definitely stepping up in class. Not sure if he belongs with these at 30-1. Then nine, Fierceness. That's the one that Gino's heard of. This is the first horse that I can mention that he knows. This is the horse that won the Florida Derby, won the Travers, won the Jim Dandy. His buyer in the Travers is 110. He's 5-5. We're leading at the top of the stretch. Can he control the pace? That's what's going to come down for Fierceness.
He won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year.
Yes, he did.
No horse has ever won the Juvenile and the Classic.
Very true. Very true. The 10 is Tappet Trice. This is a horse that was very hot in the beginning of the year. Done nothing, really. Won a couple of stakes races, but for the most part, another 30-1 gray horse. That's a closer. The 11, Sierra Leone. Another horse Gino knows. This is a dead closer. This is a horse that lost close in his last four races. 2/3, 2 seconds. Three out of four races he ran really, really well. One race he got beaten a little bit. Had a great race in the Travers. He really did.
Third in the Travers, second in the Jim Dandy, third in the Belmont, second in the Kentucky Derby.
The Belmont was the only one. Yeah, the Belmont's the only one you could say he didn't have a great race. The rest of them, he was good.
And these are high-quality races, too.
Absolutely. Arthur's Ride, the only old guy, only four and up in this race. Five and up, I think. 12. He had great workouts. He won the Whitney. He's got the two best buyers combined of the year, you know, with 111 and 110. This is the early speed as well. Something to look out for Arthur's Pride. The 13, another horse that's a little bit out of his element, I think. Newgate won the Santa Anita Handicap, but he's coming up in class. And finally, the 14th is really one of the most interesting horses in the entire field. Next. This horse runs marathons. This horse runs 2 mile races, 2.25. His shortest race is really a mile and a half. They're bringing him back. He's going lower at 1.25. He's won his last six races, I think 9.5, 11.5. One was like 17. He's been blowing everybody out, but these are marathon races. And now we have to see if he can bring it back down. Kev, any comments on these horses before we make a pick?
I think you covered them real well there, Darren.
So who do you like?
I got to stick with my guy. I got to stick with Rapoli Stables, Fletcher Velasquez, and Fierceness. I've got to stick with them. They've won the coming off wins at the Travers and the Jim Dandy. Running real well the second half of the year. Real chance to make sure they capture Horse of the Year. This would clinch it for them. So I like Fierceness. I think Next has a real good chance of hitting the board. And you know what? I'm going to throw Sierra Leone in there as well because the guy's consistently on the board and has been running well in big races all year. This is just another spot for him.
I'm going to say something weird. I'm going to take the two horses that are the bookends of the race. The 14 doesn't affect a horse like Next, I don't think, as much because he's just going to run for miles and it doesn't really freaking matter. The one is a weird spot, I know, for the Japanese horse, but I think that I don't know. I think he's going to run a really good race for Forever Young. I think he's won 6 or 7 and could have easily won the Derby. I'm going to take 14-1 as my top two. And then the third horse I'm going to throw in is Arthur's Ride. I think he's going to hold on after setting the early pace to hold on for third. So that'll be my triple. Kev, any other comments on the other races before we move on?
I think the only other one I can think of is at Distaff. Everybody watched the Travers, saw Torpedo Anna, the filly. Put up a hell of a battle, finished second to Fierceness in the Travers. She's morning line 4-5. This is a horse that's not going off any more than 2-5 or 1-2, maybe if you're lucky.
I think the horse is a 2-5 horse as well. A couple other quick points, just a turf sprint. Cogburn, 7-5 shot, gets the 9 hole on this one. Two Europeans will be coming in here, Bradsell being the best one. Cogburn, I've got to see if he can beat the Europeans, because that's an interesting matchup. Usually European horses do really well on the turf. And then I think Carl Spangler has the same type of race in the Breeders' Turf Mile. See if he could. He's been hot really lately. Is going to see if he can hold off the horses from overseas as well, which is always interesting. And then finally, the sprint. I think the sprint is a really good race this year. I think Federal Judge and Milliken and Straight No Chase are all really, really good horses, all American horses. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. And, you know, Dirt Mile, you know, Cinderella's Dream and Content are both really good. I mean, there's a lot of good races in this. A lot of money to be made, a lot of big fields. If you like numbers, bet numbers. You have a shot to win anything. You can really win some big money here in the Breeders' Cup. We'll recap it next week. Gino.
All right. Time for NFL picks. Week number 9. We are 34-36-2.
I'm killing that.
In spite of me, Kevin is 15-8-1. Darren, 10-13-1. I am 9-15 pulling up the rear. Kev, start us off with some NFL picks for this week.
This was hard to pick this week. First game, I'm picking Detroit at Green Bay. Spread right now is 3.5. Again, Love, questionable. With a groin injury, I think it would probably be wise if he doesn't play this week. Detroit could just put up numbers at will. 3.5 just seems too small. I'll take Detroit minus the 3.5. My second game, I'm taking another road team. Joe Flacco. I know Minnesota's pass defense can be a little tough at times, but this is a good offensive line, like you said earlier, Darren. The Colts are getting 5.5. I think Flacco, and there's even a chance of backdoor cover here. You know, I think the Colts keep this close enough and cover the 5.5 points at Minnesota. Minnesota losing 2 in a row also. They're looking for a win, but you may be catching them at the right time. The third game, I want to take Washington, but I'm leaving that for you, Gino. I'm assuming you're taking Washington. You know what? Anti-Cowboys. Let's go with the Falcons minus 2.5 against the Cowboys at home. No other reason than hate the Cowboys. And it's less than a field goal. Falcons have been looking a lot better lately. I'll take the Falcons at home.
I like all three of those, by the way. Darren?
Okay, well, you know, there's two of them I can go head-to-head with y'all, so let's see if I decide to do that. First of all, I'm taking Baltimore minus 9 against Denver. I just think this is one of those spots where Denver is not going to be ready to play. Baltimore is going to kind of jump on them a little bit, and I think that Denver's going to have to play from behind, and I don't think they're equipped to do so. So I think Baltimore can win this game. I think this is an ugly game. I think this is like a 31-7 type game. Number two, I will go head-to-head. Screw it. Minnesota minus 5. I have 5. You have 5.5, so I'll go whatever the spread is that Gino tells me. Against Indianapolis, I think Minnesota is just going to have after two straight losses, I think they're going to come out fired up. I don't think Indy can cover the pass very well, and I think Minnesota can throw it very well.
5.5.
It's 5.5. Okay. And so I'm going to take the Vikings. Number 3. All right, you took my Falcons. You wanted to take the Giants. I'm going to take Green Bay. I'm going to go against you twice. You're hot and I'm not. So I think Green Bay loses by a field goal, but I think they keep this game really, really exciting. I think Detroit's had a little too easy. They haven't been hit in the mouth in a couple of weeks. I think this will be the first time they get hit in the mouth in a while. I think that Green Bay keeps it close. They might even win this one.
Well, Gino? My first one, I'm going right to my team. Washington, minus 3.5 at the Giants. Don't love the way the Giants are playing. Love the way my Commanders are playing. Washington minus 3.5 is my first pick. Second pick is I'm taking Philly minus the 7.5 against the Jaguars. I think Jacksonville's got a little problems going on. Kirk's out for the year. Brian Thomas, don't know if he's going to be playing. Philadelphia minus the 7.5 is my second pick. And my third pick is Buffalo. I'm taking the Bills minus the 6.5 against the Dolphins at home. Dolphins still trying to get themselves situated with Tua back. Buffalo just keeps rolling right now at 6-2. I'll take Buffalo minus the 6.5.
Gino, that was one of the games I had written down too. I had Buffalo minus 6.
Yeah.
And just so you both know how far off I am from this week, I like the Giants was the other team. The only one I had with you is Atlanta. And the other game I was thinking about was Carolina and New Orleans taking 7.5 with Carolina, but I didn't want to do that. And so I'm opposite you guys all week this week.
Just to give a Yankee update, we are in the bottom of the eighth. Yankees are down 7-6 at the moment. Really some bad defensive plays going on in this game. Catches interference last inning. It just, there's a lot of stuff going on with the Yankees right now. But they are down 7-6 in the eighth. One out in the eighth. So we'll see how this plays out. Darren?
All right. College hoops starts on Monday for all that care like me. We'll see what happens as the season progresses, but it's going to be a long one. We'll be getting much more into that as the new year comes around and college football ends. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin and Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports, a wacky world where the Yankees can blow a 5-0 lead. Please download, in the fifth inning, by the way, download our podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, Audio Boom, whatever you like. Please follow us on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. We're all over the place. Like, share, subscribe, ask for more, beg for more, because that's what we want to give you. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.